be seated. All right, we have this one case on our 130 docket, then we'll recess for a little bit and we'll pick up with our second case at 3 p.m. First case is Ross and Leah Mandel versus Louisville Independent School District, Denton County, and plaintiff and Klossner Holdings. I understand counsel have checked in already and stated to the clerk the time and how y'all are sharing it. So I do have that up here with me. So we will proceed in the order that y'all have requested. I have Justice Ann Gardner with me to my right and Justice Lee Gabriel to my left, and I'm Justice Terry Livingston. All right, we'll begin, I believe, with Mr. Dennis.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, and may it please the court. I represent Ross and Leah Mandel, who are challenging the default judgment that ultimately resulted in the loss of their home. We, of course, been before this court on due process grounds, We've, of course, been before this court before, and I believe this exact panel, in the restricted appeal. And this is the bill of review that examines an issue left open by this court's published decision in that restricted appeal. Specifically, the original service of citation was for the 2010 tax year. The record now reveals those taxes were paid almost within days of the lawsuit being served in August, on or around August 15th or August 16th of 2011. They received a letter from counsel for LAISD that said your taxes have been paid, there are still some court costs. No other communication was made with the Mandels until the default judgment was taken in November of 2012 for the 2011 tax year. The amended petition was filed in the summer of 2012, and on the restricted appeal, what was argued was under Rule 21A, pursuant to the Texas Supreme Court's decision in NRE EA, it abrogated Weaver to the extent that new citation was not necessary, and that instead Rule 21A would be permitted for service of a more onerous petition or petition that added a new cause of action. This court held in the restricted appeal context that the Rule 21A certificate of service by counsel for LISD sufficed as prima facie evidence of the service of that amended petition, which had alleged a new cause of action in the form of a new tax year. We cited a number of cases from the U.S. Supreme Court and other courts in which each tax year is a new cause of action. No other authority has ever been cited to the contrary in all of the briefing. And so this court interpreted NRE EA and extended it and said, we say that if a new cause of action is alleged, it is sufficient to serve it by Rule 21A. We had noted in our briefing that LISD had conceded their effort at serving the amended petition by certified mail had failed. This court properly noted in a footnote, in footnote 10 or 11, that that was outside of the record for the restricted appeal, so they couldn't consider whether or not the certified mail had actually been claimed or returned to them unclaimed. But now we return with the bill of review with this additional information. It is now undisputed that there was no service of the amended petition on the Mandels. Interestingly, to that point, what I would highlight is that there's no evidence at all of an effort to serve. The Mandels sent discovery after this court's opinion in the restricted appeal, leaving open basically this one issue, sent discovery out and received back an interrogatory response that said that LISD tried to serve the Mandels by certified mail, but that certified mail returned unclaimed. Based on that discovery and that interrogatory response, the Mandels went ahead and moved for summary judgment. The actual effort, the evidence of any letter having been sent by certified mail, any testimony that a letter was sent by certified mail with that amended petition adding the new cause of action is not in the record, was never produced, and is not before this court. So there's no evidence at all that there was an attempt at service. There is an interrogatory response that says any attempt that was made was returned unclaimed. And as the court is aware, the Texas Supreme Court said in that same NREA decision that a return of certified mail unclaimed is not an effort at service and does not suffice. So we believe that we've now returned on the bill of review, following up on this court's opinion that the Rule 21A certificate of service was not accurate in the sense that there was no actual service upon the Mandels.
So are you saying then that your clients then brought forward some evidence indicating that the certificate of service contained in the amended pleadings were insufficient?
Yes, Your Honor. And the evidence that I would point to would be both Mr. and Mrs. Mandel's testimony they didn't receive it, as well as the interrogatory answer from the LISD saying that the effort that they made was not received. And in fact, in their admissions, they admit that they had knowledge that the Mandels had not received that amended petition when they took the default judgment in November of 2012. So that presumption or prima facie evidence, however you describe it, falls away, and then the burden is on them to show the service. So we think we've met our burden to show that the default judgment was based on a amended petition asserting a new cause of action on which the Mandels had no notice whatsoever.
And let me ask another question. And did you state that in the interim, though, the 2010 taxes had been paid, but they were not paid by the Mandels? Is that in the record?
Your Honor, I do not have the record site,
okay,
but I could probably get it for the rebuttal. The taxes were paid by the Mandels. In fact, LISD produced and put into evidence a letter from Ross Mandel to their firm enclosing the check for the full amount.
Okay,
I thought
I had read somewhere that the lien holder had paid.
That was alleged in the restricted appeal.
Okay.
And I'll find the record site, but
that's
I believe
right.
that the evidence showed it was paid by Mr. Mandel in August of 2011. So beyond the sort of straightforward rule from the Texas Supreme Court and the due process holdings, we would say an additional policy ground would be literally, as I described, Mr. Mandel sent that letter with the check for the amount of the 2010 taxes and received no correspondence other than the letter from LISD saying, we've received your money, your 2010 taxes have been paid, you still owe a few hundred dollars for court costs. Nothing else was received by the Mandels until after the judgment was taken in November of 2012 against them.
And there was no settlement agreement upon payment of the 2010 taxes that
no,
the
Your
lawsuit
Honor.
Would be dismissed or anything like that?
No, Your Honor. I don't want to go outside the record, but the record basically shows service and then an unsolicited letter by Mr. Mandel with the full amount of the taxes.
All right. Thank you.
So we believe we followed up on this court's opinion in which you extended in REA to provide 21A service is sufficient, but now we have brought forth evidence showing that 21A service did not occur. In response, we've received a number of defenses to that, and I'll just quickly go through them. We certainly address them in the briefing. The first of which is a law of the case res judicata argument. There's really no merit whatsoever to that argument because, as we detail and as this court acknowledged in its own opinion, the restricted appeal is limited to the face of the record. This court acknowledged that we have to accept the Rule 21A certificate of service as prima facie evidence in that restricted appeal context. So this court could not possibly have reached whether or not 21A service actually occurred, which is the issue before the court now. That same thing, the res judicata law of the case appear to be sort of the same argument that this court has already decided the issue, but that is absolutely not the case. The next argument is that it's not a new cause of action or it's not more onerous relief. But of course, that argument was presented to this court in the restricted appeal, and this court did not accept it, and in fact, went through the analysis of, we're going to rely on 21A. In fact, you specifically say you interpret NREA to extend not just to more onerous relief, but new causes of action, and go through that analysis. You wouldn't have gone through the analysis if their argument that they never have to serve an amended petition was actually had any merit. And again, I said this before, but I'll just say that no case has ever been cited in any of the briefing extensive that a new tax year is not a new cause of action. And I know those cases are cited in a tax context. There's no case directly on point with a default judgment in this context with a new tax year, but there is no authority whatsoever, analogous or otherwise, that a new tax year is not a new cause of action. And I think the Texas Supreme Court's jurisprudence is pretty clear under pre-Weaver that you need a new citation, but at the very least now under post-NREA and this court's decision in Mandel 1, that you need at least 21A service. And that's not asking, the LIC says we're asking to put a great burden on them, and especially given Rule 21A's amendment, it's quite easy to serve people email. Now it includes first-class mail, certified mail. There are a number of ways to get 21A service, and when you're adding a new cause of action, that's not very much to ask for the government before ultimately taking your property. And I would highlight on that very point, conceptually, on a default judgment, it admits the allegations that are made and what you're served. The 2011 taxes, you were in the middle of the 2011 year. It was August of 2011 when the personal service was made on the Mandels. The 2011 taxes weren't even owing. It was half the year, well, a little more than half the year. They wouldn't be owing for another 5 months. So there's not an argument that by having served that and them not answering that, they somehow admitted something about a tax year that had not even come into being in terms of money owed by them. Then another argument they raise is a lot of briefing is spent by LSD on other elements of the traditional bill of review. I'm happy to answer questions on that, but I think we cited the authority from the Texas Supreme Court, from the U.S. Supreme Court, that other elements of the traditional bill of review don't apply in a due process challenge, which is what the Mandels have made here. There's also Rule 117A is cited again. Rule 117A regards, it was very important for the restricted appeal, but is with respect to citation in a tax suit and has nothing to do with whether or not 21A should serve an amended petition. There's no exception that's been carved out as to why due process wouldn't require the Mandels be notified of a new tax year, a new cause of action being asserted against them.
But doesn't that go to the intervener's notice to the Mandels, the application of the 117A?
Yes. I mean, I think that this court decided with respect to the interveners that they did not need more notice than what LISD was to give, but they were relying on LISD having put the Mandels on notice of the 2011 tax year. So they never made any service. I mean, there would be a more interesting case if the interveners had actually served the Mandels with something which reflected a 2011 tax year being at issue, but it didn't happen. They weren't required to, and I think that's what the court said. They weren't required to join LISD, but they had to rely on LISD having properly served the amended petition alleging the new cause of action for the 2011 tax year.
Well, could you address the language in Rule 117A? I know it's a long rule, but that says once citation or notice has been given, I mean, Section 4 of the rule, citation, general provisions, let me start over. Once citation or notice has been given on behalf of any plaintiff or intervener taxing unit, the court shall have jurisdiction to hear and determine the tax claims of all taxing units who are parties, plaintiff, intervener, or defendant at the time such process is issued, and of all taxing units intervening afterwards, not only for the taxes, et cetera, which may be due at the time suit is filed, but those becoming delinquent thereon at any time thereafter up to and including the date of judgment.
Yes. Justice Carter, I have two responses. One, I mean, that's what's the language of the citation. And so what I would say first is there's a difference between personal jurisdiction over the Mandels. The court acquires personal jurisdiction by the service of the original petition. What we're talking about is a due process challenge to the entry of the judgment. The due process challenge to the entry of the judgment would require, under Texas Supreme Court and U.S. Supreme Court standards, a notice of the claim against them. And they didn't have notice that the 2011 taxes were owed. And then beyond just they didn't have technical notice, they were affirmatively, as a policy matter, the only correspondence they had was literally a letter saying your taxes have been paid, and then nothing until they got a completely new judgment on a separate tax year. Due process can't allow, well, let me give a counterexample. If that were the case, then this case could be on file, and 10 years later, they could take a judgment with no further notice for all the intervening tax years. And so, I mean, what I would say is, one, the rule doesn't apply to obviate the requirements of 21A and what the Texas Supreme Court has said is required by due process. In order to have due process, Weaver, now in Re A, you need to serve a new cause of action or more onerous relief on a non-answering defendant before you take judgment. And then my second response to that language in 117A would be, whether it's Peralta or the whole line of authority, that a procedural rule or a state rule can't prevent or can't obstruct a due process challenge. I think we talked in the briefing, you know, a deadline. There was a case where there's a deadline of 2 months to bring a bill of review. The U.S. Supreme Court says, no, you can't do that. You have the other elements we talked about earlier of a traditional bill of review. The U.S. Supreme Court says, no, you can't engraft on these things which deny the essence of due process here. And I think the Texas Supreme Court in Re A said, without exception, if you have an amended petition alleging more onerous relief or new cause of action, you have to give notice under due process. I see my time's out. Are there no further questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dennis. Now, Mr. Scherer.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. George Scherer, appearing for Appalachia Louisville ISD. This case concerns whether or not the Mandels were given due process and whether or not they were served correctly. But we think the more narrow issue is this. When you file a lawsuit to collect delinquent taxes, are you required to reserve the defendants every time they let a new tax year become delinquent? We think under Texas law, the answer to that question is no, you don't, because it's not a new cause of action. And so today, there are two main areas that I want to talk about. First, we believe the courts have already decided and ruled that they were properly served. Second, the school district had no legal duty to serve them a second time. I want to go back to the underlying lawsuit. This issue was expressly before the trial court. The trial court ruled that they had been properly served, and in its opinion, it was not necessary to serve them a second time. The Mandels filed a restricted appeal to this court, and this court affirmed the judgment of the trial court. And this court, in its opinion, made some very specific findings that we think are relevant here today. First, that yes, the Mandels were properly served. Second, they were given all the notice they were entitled to under the law, and there was nothing that was misleading in either the pleadings or the citations that were served upon them. And finally, and this may be the most important point, the trial court was correct when it ruled that it was not necessary to serve them a second time. They then filed a petition for review that the Texas Supreme Court denied. So we think this court got it right. You applied the law correctly. The reading from all that is they were given due process, they were given all the notice they were entitled to under the law, and the only logical conclusion you can come to is taxes that come due after the lawsuit is filed are not a new cause of action. So it's our position with respect to that. We've already litigated that issue, and that's res judicata in this particular case.
How do you respond to their position that was a restricted appeal and we could only look at the record, and now they've produced evidence to refute the prima facie showing that the 21A certificate of service was all that was necessary?
Well, our position is you don't have to reach whether or not service was or wasn't effectuated under 21A simply because under 117A it says that you have to serve a citation on them, and I believe as Justice Livingston talked about earlier, it gives you notice at that point of what was being sought. Taxes due at that point, the court cost, and anything that comes due after that. You were put on notice at that point of exactly what relief the taxing jurisdictions are seeking. Turning to the second issue, The petition for review was denied, again, because we believe this court correctly interpreted the relevant law. The relevant law is Rule 117A of the Rules of Procedure. 117A tells us what notice has to be given to defendants in tax lawsuits to afford due process. The citation served on the Mandels provided the notice required by this rule. It told them, again, exactly what we were suing for, the taxes that were due when it was filed, all the court costs, and anything that came due until this case was concluded. They were given notice of that. Had they read these citations, that would have been clear. They have made the argument that once they paid the original taxes, and there's been no dispute about that, they did pay the original taxes, they tell this court that the lawsuit was over at that point, and that's simply not true. Under the tax code, they are required to pay the court cost. 117A allows us to recover for those court costs. So as long as the court costs remain unpaid, this case was open. So they didn't pay the court cost at that time, and then they let another tax year become delinquent, and that's ultimately what we took judgment on. They have also said that they are entitled or were entitled to receive a copy of our amended pleading. 117A speaks to that as well. 117A says, in a tax lawsuit, again, this is a rule specific to tax lawsuits, in a tax lawsuit, you must serve a citation upon the defendants. The rule specifically says it is not necessary to serve a copy of the pleadings. All the information that the defendants need is set forth in the citation. So our position is this: if we had no legal duty to serve a copy of the petition when the lawsuit was filed, we wouldn't have a legal duty to do so when we filed an amended pleading that contained exactly the same parties and was for taxes on exactly the same property. The trial court obtained jurisdiction both personally over the defendants and to enter the judgment when the citations were served on them.
The original citations?
Yes, Your Honor.
And they were served without question?
There's no question. That was one of the issues that was determined in the restricted appeal. There was proper personal service. So that established two things: personal jurisdiction over the Mandels, and then the jurisdiction for the trial. In fact, Rule 117A speaks to that as well, that the court has jurisdiction to enter judgment for any taxes that come due during the lawsuit. So from that perspective, we believe it's legally irrelevant whether or not they received it or whether or not we sent it, because they had already been properly served. In our brief, we have cited the cases that we believe are relevant for the notice that must be given in the tax lawsuits, specifically the Mejia case, a Texas Supreme Court case this court has discussed and visited in the past, the Canseco case, the Houston Court of Appeals gives a very good discussion about the role of the citation and the notice it provides and just how that fits into the due process scheme, the Williams case out of the Dallas Court of Appeals. We've acknowledged in our brief this rule is not absolute, but that's the general rule. When you file a lawsuit, you serve the defendants with a citation, and if more taxes come due during that lawsuit, you're not required to reserve them. That's the general rule. In our brief, we have cited an exception to this, and that was the Bennett versus Wood County case. There, the county filed a lawsuit, they got service, but then they filed an amended pleading, added a second account, but they didn't reserve the defendant, and they took judgment. And the Tyler Court of Appeals said, no, you can't do that. You did receive a more burdensome judgment when you took judgment on two accounts rather than just one. You should have reserved them. We don't have the concerns articulated in the Bennett case here, because we had exactly the same parties and we had exactly the same property. The core of their argument is that each tax year requires new service. So I would pose a little hypothetical to show that doesn't square with what 117A says. Let's say they didn't pay the original year tax. And let's say all the other facts are the same. We went to trial the same date that we did. So now we had 2 years worth of taxes rather than just one. See, I've got 2 minutes. They're telling this court then the trial court could not have entered a judgment for multiple years' taxes. because they hadn't been served, in their opinion, on the second year worth of taxes. Well, that's not what 117A says, and that's not what 117A means. Very quickly, I want to go through just some of the bill of review discussion here. They had to show three things. They didn't show any of them. They had to show a meritorious defense to the underlying judgment. The tax statements admitted to evidence showed the taxes were due. They had to show that the judgment was obtained by extrinsic fraud that prevented them from presenting their defenses. We still don't know what that is. Finally, they had to show that they didn't allow the judgment to either be entered or to become final through no negligence of their own. Well, we've established they were properly served, and we've cited the case law that says when you're properly served, if you let a default judgment be entered without finding an appearance, that's negligence. After the judgment was entered, they were sent several notices advising them that judgment had been entered. Again, they didn't do anything. They could have filed a motion for a new trial or something along those lines, and they didn't do anything.
And their position, though, is, of course, that since they didn't have service, they didn't have to show the other three elements for the bill of review.
Well, and I would argue that the restricted appeal established that they were properly served, so they do have to satisfy each of them in order to get bill of review relief. I would just conclude today by saying that they were properly served, given all the notice they were entitled to under the law, and there simply is no injustice for this court to remedy. Properly entered judgments need to have finality, and that's what we're asking for, is finality on this properly entered judgment. I see I'm out of time. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Scherer. Mr. Bragg. And you're representing Denton, correct?
May it please the court, my name is Gilbert Bragg, and I do represent Intervenor County of Denton. Some of the things I may say may be a little bit repetitious of what Mr. Scherer has said, but I'm here today specifically to argue the trial court correctly granted Denton County's motion for summary judgment dismissing the appellant's bill of review. And on a motion for summary judgment, basically what we're saying, our side is saying, when we file that motion for summary judgment with the trial court, is, Your Honor, there is no fact issue here for you to decide. Now, one of the things that has been discussed by both the attorneys who argued before me, they keep talking about this amended petition that Mr. Mandel says through his unsworn statement that was attempted to be offered, that he didn't receive it. A very important fact about that amended petition is that it was not filed for the purpose of notifying the Mandels of anything. The reason the amended petition was filed is because the lien holder had never been served in the first place. So in order to obtain service on the lien holder, amended petition was filed, the lien holder was served, amended petition mailed to the Mandels as a courtesy, as a collection technique, not because there was some legal standard that had to be met. And that's the reason that I didn't object in the trial court to Mr. Mandel's unsworn statement that he never received it. Because in my perspective, I didn't care, legally speaking, whether he received it or not. It wasn't necessary that he receive it. And the reason for that, again, we come back to Rule 117A, and I must say to the court, I have practiced in this area of law for 38 years, and I'm impressed, quite frankly, with the writing in your decision, in the case below. And I highlighted a couple of things here. It says a winding road through the rules of civil procedure leads us to those that govern suits for delinquent ad valorem taxes. And you spent a lot of time analyzing what might be a very small corner of the law of civil procedure, but which is very important when we're talking about delinquent tax collections. And after several pages of analysis, you came to the conclusion, thus we hold that the citation served on the Mandels fully conformed with the requirements of due process. That's pretty clear. That doesn't leave much for debate. But as Your Honor mentioned, you need to consult the rule to say what it actually says. And it does say that all parties to the suit shall take notice, and I'm going to skip through here in the interest of time, that all taxes becoming delinquent thereon at any time thereafter up to the date of judgment, et cetera, et cetera. That is not unambiguous. There is no ambiguity in Rule 117A. It is clear. So my client's position is, once they have been served under Rule 117A, they are properly in court. And on this bill of review, what I really expected to hear was, we were never served at all. I really thought that, you remember Mr. Mandel in the case below or in the restricted appeal was complaining because his citation didn't have a time filled out. So on the bill of review, what I really thought I was going to get was an affidavit from Mr. Mandel saying, well, I had to argue that in that case because that was a technical. But the truth is, I wasn't served. I wasn't home. It was my wife's cousin that got served. It wasn't me. If that had been the case, Your Honors, we would certainly have had a reason to have a bill of review, to review the underlying cause of action, because there would have truly been a defect there. But the fact that the amended petition was not mailed, was not received, doesn't rise to that point. And the other point that's very important is the judgment could have been taken for the court cost only and the property sold for the court cost only had it been done prior to the addition of the 2011 taxes. So my perspective on what is a more onerous burden is if you change the property description. You know, you have a 20-acre tract, and the next year the appraisal district has enlarged it to a 30-acre tract, and we're going to take judgments on the 30-acre tract instead of the two. Obviously, we have changed what we're going after, but just the mere addition of another year of tax doesn't rise to that, and my time is up, but I'd be glad to answer any questions. I did mention the law of the case, and I cited the four cases that this court has used that doctrine. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bragg. All right, rebuttal, Mr. Dennis.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the last point he made, the law of the case, it's just inapplicable because the issue could not have been raised by us. The issue we present now is a due process challenge to the failure to having received the amended petition alleging a new cause of action. He spends an effort to say what a good job this court did in its first opinion, but he doesn't point out exactly the language we talked about in the original remarks, which is you applied in REA. You said, yes, you do have to serve an amended petition. This is a new cause of action for a tax year. We extend in REA to cover it. There's no new citation, but you do have to serve under Rule 21A, and spent time talking about how that was prima facie evidence and not a presumption, therefore it was evidence sufficient for a restricted appeal. And we followed that and came back and showed that we put on opposing evidence. The presumption is gone. It's no longer prima facie evidence, and they have no contrary evidence. It was never served. I do want to come back to two things briefly. It's the record, page 488 to 491, is the check from Mr. Mandel, the letter to Robert Luna's office on August 16th of 2012, literally the day he was allegedly served, which we're not challenging personal service. That leads to my next rebuttal point. They're confusing two issues, personal citation and jurisdiction by the court over the people versus due process to enter the judgment. So, for example, you could personally serve me with a citation and then not serve me with an amended petition and then go to take that judgment, and it would violate due process. We're not challenging the personal citation anymore. This court resolved that in the restricted appeal, but I think it's in the briefing. I'm looking at Rose v. Rose, which was a Waco Court of Appeals decision, 117 Southwestern 3rd, 84, which has an analysis that goes through this in relevant part, that jurisdiction of the parties and the court's jurisdiction over those parties is the personal citation. That's Rule 117A. That does not have any relevance to have you complied with due process when there are clear admonitions from the Texas Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court that a non-answering defendant has to be served with any petition that seeks more onerous relief because you haven't given him notice that you are seeking a new cause of action. And so it's one thing to say in the citation that other entities may set up here, the Rule 117 citation, other entities may come forward and have a portion of this 2010 tax obligation. It's quite a different thing to say we have to give you no notice whatsoever of a new cause of action for a new tax year. If they were in the lawsuit, if they had answered, then they would have had to show that they were seeking another tax year. All we're asking is not some onerous burden. We're saying comply with Rule 21A. You can do it by email now. You can do it by first-class mail now. You can do it by certified mail. It is not a heavy obligation, but it's an obligation that you have to satisfy to comply with due process. The Mandels, it's neither according to the law, based on the Texas Supreme Court saying a non-answering defendant needs this notice, this court having said it's a new cause of action, but it's also fundamentally unfair. When you look at the situation, they paid their taxes. Counsel for LISD is talking about, with their court costs. These are lay people. You can see that in the record site I cite you, they just mailed the letter back. And knowing that court costs and that this lawsuit wasn't going to be dismissed and that all of a sudden, without any further notice, the 2011 taxes would be taken judgment on and their house be taken away, that's not fundamentally fair either. The NREA said that due process could be satisfied in this context without a new personal service of citation, but not no notice whatsoever before they take their house. I don't know why this court would go out of its way to accept them. They have no law for this. They have no citation of authority. Why you would accept them under 117A from simple compliance with due process by mailing a notice of an amended petition seeking a new tax year under Rule 21A. It's not a heavy obligation. And what's more, if this were a civil suit, I think the court would hardly even have much challenge or thought about it, because you'd say, well, of course, Mr. Dennis, you can't take judgment against him while you served him with process. You added a new claim for breach of contract. You added additional damages beyond what you sought in the original petition.
But that's why we have 117A, is because this isn't a regular civil lawsuit.
Right.
And the notice, the form of notice that's contained under 117A specifically says it's for taxes due now and any that become due in the future.
And Your Honor, why would you give someone less due process in dealing with the
taxes? Because the rule says to?
Well, and Your Honor, I know my time's out, but I would just respond that it's well established, getting rid of the traditional elements of the Bill of Review, as well as all those other cases, you can't set up state court rules or procedural obstacles that obviate due process. I mean, in REA, the Texas Supreme Court didn't make any distinction like that. No court's ever made that distinction. So we'd ask you to reverse the decision and set aside the default judgment for the Mandels based on their due process challenge. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Dennis, thank you. Mr. Scherer and Mr. Bragg, we appreciate all of your arguments today and all of your briefing in this matter. Your case is now submitted. And